Okay, today is August 31st, 2015, and it's Monday morning, the first class of the Monday Shia. First of all, I want to say good morning above all to the myriad of students listening across the world, what we call virtual students, and I'm very moved by your dedication and love. It was really amazing, my 5 weeks in Gullis, wherever I walked, wherever I spoke, wherever people ran out to embrace me and repeat Shurim to me. I can't say they're not my students if they can repeat word by word what they heard. I also got the finest gift I ever gave in my life, and I thank Moshe and Esther Shurin, Rabbi Shurin. But we'll talk about it some other time. I want to teach today. Everyone's bothering me from Yana de Yoma. I have opinions that might be necessarily correct, but we'll leave that for a press conference further down the line. But everyone is talking today about ordaining women. The Jerusalem Post yesterday, one of their lead articles, front page, women, rabbis, whatnot. So I am the first Rosh Kollel to have been ordained by a woman. And I'll leave it at that. It was the greatest gift I ever got in my life. What happened? It's mamash Gilui Eliyahu. I'm still shaking from that Shabbat in Lawrence. And I thank the Shurins once again. And while my words appear esoteric today, we'll clarify them at a later date. Now, this class has a long history. I began teaching the Kollel in 78, and we organized the program then. It was an official program. If you read Washington, you'll understand the role I played. I don't have to repeat myself. What is already written is written, published, published. Let it stand. So I gave the class, as I spoke about yesterday, in response to literature. And a year or two later, the boys pleaded with me to give a class in contemporary issues. YU was a little bit different then. The swing to the right was not as pronounced, and there was not yet a big swing to the left. And more or less, the Rav was still functioning, although not in full strength, as you can understand. So I think it was 80, or I think it was 1980, I gave up the only free time I had during the week, because I was teaching like a machine at that time in a number of college programs and the Kollel, and I started a class in contemporary Hashkafa. Now that class goes on until today. I spent 22 years on Moria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, out of which the two volumes of the Rav came out of three lectures in that 22-year series. Three lectures came into the two volumes of the Rav. And then we went into the history of Torah in modern times, which had been my bread and butter course in BMT. And I gave it on a different level on the Kollel. It took over 3 years, almost 4 years. Then I spent 10 years on questions my students asked me and what I answered. At the end of those 10 years, my Yetzer Hara was to go back to the Rav, because by Yakum Da Chadash, I'm now talking to a classroom where the older people here all knew the Rav, and the younger people, including Rafi Klein, never had heard a shiur from the Rav in his life, and they're totally dependent upon their Rebbeim, who the Rav was, and every Rebbe distills it his own way. Aaron Rakefet, who's not a bright guy, Baruch Hashem doesn't distill anything. He gives you the Rav as the Rav was. I think I've earned the right to say that. So I really thought of going back and doing another 22 years on the Rav. But then my mother died, Zichrona Livracha, and Rabbaron Lichtenstein took ill. And with that, I became very, very cognizant of my age. I never was cognizant of my age before, because when you have a mother, and I visited her every morning, she lived right opposite the Kollel, and she would say, hi, Ani. Good morning, and I could say, hi, Mom. And when you're Arnie and it's Mom, you're young. And then when I realized my age, over three plus years ago, I did something I never did before. I went against my Rebbe's advice. My Rebbe taught me, always teach what you don't know. And all the years, I've taught what I don't know. But here, I face the dilemma, because when it comes to the history of Torah in the United States, whatever the reasons are, I'm the last Mohegan standing, and what I know, not many people know, if anyone alive today knows. And I have the advantage of viewing it through the prism, not just of Shas and Paiskim and Mori and Rebbe, but as a doctorate graduate of Bernard Revels, I can see it a little bit differently and combine what the Rav instilled with it, balanced. So I decided I have to get it out of my system, and I taught the history of the, in the United States. We're now in the fourth year. We're now up to the middle of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and picking off where I left off last month, exactly where I left off. And I just want to add one word of description. I could have done the Lubavitcher Rebbe in one lecture and just mentioned the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what he did in America, had great impact. But I found when it came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the students that I faced, just as I mentioned, that Rafi Klein never heard a shiur from the Rav, outside of watching a video, Rafi Klein was never at a Fabrengen at the Rebbe. And with all due respects to virtual students, and many of them apologize to me and say, Rebbe, we know that you feel virtual students are not like real students. It's a big difference from knowing the Rebbe in person and being at a Fabrengen and watching a video when you go into some, it's not Shmuel Bernstein anymore, but whatever it's called on the Upper West Side, that Delicatessen, whatever it's called. I don't want to give publicity or people will accuse me of getting paid by the deli for publicizing them. But when the Talmud took us out and when either side of the room we saw the Rebbe speaking, it's still a big difference. And I feel very bad because your generation, that's not the who the Rebbe was, your attitude is the messianic, have contributed to a detrimental description of the Rebbe, and I feel very bad about that. So I decided to spend a lot of time on the Rebbe. We spent many months. I hope you've listened to the lectures. I hope you're not coming in cold. And some of you know from my lectures why I know a little bit more than the average Litvak about the Rebbe. I had a direct connection to the Rebbe's office, as I explained last year. And I want to continue with the Rebbe. Now, a few words about the class. First of all, I'm very upset looking around the room now. Yesterday I had next to no students from the Kollel. If you're only going to take one, first of all, if you're going to study with Rakefet, take both classes. Get to know the man. Get to get a feeling of what Talmidim of the Rav were like back in the golden era. That's number one. To just take this class and not Sunday class is not right. Number two, the Sunday class is infinitely more important than this class. This class, you'll be able to tell jokes and a little, be able to reveal a little Lashon Hara and Mechilat of the history of Torah. Big deal. The Sunday class will expose you to Kol HaTorah Kula. And as you saw, as I began yesterday, etc. So I don't understand how people are here today and weren't there yesterday. That's number one. Number two, I begin in time, I end in time. You may keep me a little longer today with questions, that's your prerogative. But Rakefet begins on time and ends in time. Number three, I only use Heinz products this year. Don't bring me any gifts that are not Heinz, 57 varieties. Baruch Hashem, this is the 57th year I'm privileged to teach Torah. I've never worked a day in my life, but I've been teaching Torah since 1959. Okay. Number four, I spoke about it yesterday, I speak about it again. Rabbi Rubin missed the shiur yesterday. He would have been dancing on the ceiling with joy, and the Rebbe has to put up with whatever his excuse was. I'm choking. You missed what I did with Mark Shapiro proving Rabbi Nasha Klein right. And you miss Reb Shaul Lieberman, how in one sentence he said what the Chatam Sofer said. And here's the only man who understood yesterday, Shia, Alex, and we're not finished yet. Wait till you see next week. I'm dealing with the biggest Litvish Rosh Yeshiva and how he was straightened out vis-a-vis what it means to be a chassid. But coming back here, credit. I got into a real snafu with the whole system, Rabbi. You got to remember, there's a faculty here. We've known each other. I know Rabbi David Miller for well over perhaps onto 60 years or more. Yeah, more than, because I knew him as a kid. His father, Kingsbridge. So we know each other, and Rabbi Asaf Bednash and Asaf Chavruter is my most devoted student ever. Yaakov Weinstein, Dr. Weinstein. So. A kid came to me last year and said, Rebbe, you know, I had to drop your course. I was all overwhelmed with the bechinat. Let me say from the start, anyone who attends class, by mere attendance, you get supplementary rabbinic credit. If you come to class and you don't learn, Rakefet deserves to fail, and he will fail. I will smack his face. If you don't come to class, how can I give you credit? So you come to class, supplementary credit. So a kid says to me, Rebbe, I was overwhelmed with Yoredeya, I was overwhelmed with Gemara. What do you think? When we grew up, we didn't have. We had Yoredeya, we had Gemara, we went to graduate school, we were married, we had girlfriends, we bought a shalala, we watched television. It was a different world. And we did it all. We did it all. So this kid says, could I get credit for your course by listening to the internet? So, like a dummy, David Miller, Rabbi Miller said to me, your problem is you have too good a heart. And that's absolutely right. My problem in life is I studied with Rabbi Israel Salanta in Kovna 200 years ago, almost 200 years ago. That's my real problem. And I took him seriously. You guys open a Musa Sefer, big deal. That Musa Sefer speaks to you like I'm talking to Meir Tzidkun at this very moment with Elvis Presley dancing a kazatska in Red Square. So Rabbi Miller says, you have too good a heart. I said to the kid, all right. Now we got more requests, more kids. I'm getting letters from YU. Can this kid get credit for this? So I want to make it clear. Until now, I said yes. From this point on, if I start giving credit for kids listening via the internet, I won't have one student in this room outside of a few elder gentlemen who value the Rebbe's life story. So please, if you want credit, come to class. That's it. Blame Rabbi Miller. He's totally opposed to giving credit for virtual students. And now I think I've said all the introductions I have to say. One, not a correction on yesterday, but I stumbled in my mind, I'll explain why, the present Belzer Rebbe is a grandson of Rabbi Yisachar Dov, if I'm correct. I stumbled because Rabbi Yisachar Dov, the Belzer Rebbe we spoke about yesterday, was the third Belzer Rebbe. The first Belzer Rebbe was Rabbi Shalom. The second Belzer Rebbe was Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yisachar Dov was the Belz Rebbe when Belz became a major, major, major Hasidut, including my wife's own family. My wife Malka has the name of the first Belz Rebbetzin. Malka and Shalom were the first Belz couple. My wife bears that name, and Zishtam from Belz Hasidim. So the third Rebbe Rosh Yisachar Dov, that's who we quoted. Now, he had a son, Rabbi Aaron Belzer, who survived the Holocaust. His entire family was wiped out, wife and 11 children. He had a younger brother who was 20 years younger. So that was my problem, Alex. The time factor was too... The younger brother, Mordechai, I checked it out this morning, was 20 years younger. They were saved. It's a whole story. It's not for now. I spoke about it when I dealt with Belzer Hasidus many, many years ago. They were saved from the Holocaust. They came to Israel. Reb Arala was the Belzer Rebbe in Tel Aviv. The stories are legendary. He remarried. He had no children. He was too old. Reb Mordechai remarried, and he had a daughter in 47 and a son in 48. By the way, the woman he remarried was a very modern woman, a Hungarian survivor who had been with a Mizrahiite, basically. Very open, and he remarried, and there was a girl and a boy, and then a year or two later, Reb Mordechai died. That boy was the only heir alive to the Belzer dynasty, Reb Yisachar Dov, named after his grandfather. Remember, I said yesterday, was it a grandson or a great-grandson? With the time framework, it was a grandson, and the elder Hasidim came to the mother and said, let us take the boy to Yerushalayim and raise him. In other words, at a very early age, they took him to the Belz Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And she agreed. It was a very hard decision on her part. I still had students in Machon Gold, who's in the 70s, whose parents were involved in saving Reb Mordechai and Reb Arila, the Belza dynasty, the Rebbe and the brother. And I had one student, one girl, who used to go to Belz, and the old Rebbetzin, the widow of Reb Mordechai, would sit her next to her because she knew what her father had done to save her husband. And that kid today rules the state of Israel to a certain degree, rules London, Antwerp, Manchester, not so much in America, but that's the present Belzer Rebbe, who's a major force in the Torah world today. And let it stand at that. That's yesterday, now today. My dear students, we ended off the year discussing a hot topic that was greatly debated at Yeshiva University, the Rav's relationship to the Rebbe. It turned out that last summer was the 20th yahrzeit of the Rebbe, and Jewish Action asked me to write an article on the Rav and the Rebbe, and my article, Baruch Hashem, hit home for one simple reason, and it seemed I was the only one left alive who remembered that the Rav had given an interview to the Maariv newspaper, to Yitzchak Halevi Yerushalmi, in the mid-70s, where a good part of the interview went about the Rav's attitude to Chabad, to the seventh Rebbe, and that's the Rav speaking on his own with no axe to grind. And we ended off the class by quoting from that interview, and I stand on everything I said, and I'll prove it even a little bit more today, that the Rav had an absolute positive attitude towards the Lubavitcher Rebbe. They knew each other from Berlin. The question was raised, did the Rav and the Rebbe know each other from Berlin? Absolutely, and I'll prove it a little later today. In addition, in that article, the Rav speaks of awe on what the Rebbe accomplished in America. We ended off the year quoting from the article where the Rav said what Lubavitch did. Oh, by the way, I'll take a class list next week. I want to be sure who's coming back, so my experience has taught me not to take a list the first week. Next week we'll make a class list. So the Rav said about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he put Lubavitch into the headlines, took Orthodox Judaism, Torah Judaism, no one paid attention to it, and now the New York Times, ala pam v'chamatam, willy-nilly, have to deal with orthodoxy, and they always called Lubavitch. Now, in 1980, the Hasidim celebrated 30 years of the Rebbe's becoming Rebbe. Now, it's not exactly true. The truth was he became Rebbe in 1951. There was one year, we'll talk about it later today or next week. There was one year between when the Rebbe died to when the sixth Rebbe died to when the seventh Rebbe officially became the Rebbe. But nevertheless, Chabad acknowledges the Rebbe as becoming Rebbe in 1950. He became the dominant spiritual person in Chabad, and they had this Bischfabringen, and the Rav came to the Fabringen. Now, I need not tell you what this means. I said at the time, and many have said it, I don't think they're repeating what I said, just anyone with a Torah soul, with a real Torah soul, reacted the same way. The fact that the Rav could come to the Fafengen of the Rebbe, that the Rav could sit there like a chassid for over 2 hours, that when the Rav, who was on in years and aged and not healthy, and when he got up to leave at the end of 2 hours, how the Rebbe escorted him and the Rebbe stood until he was out of sight. People who saw that sight saw something amazing, because you have to remember, when Chassidus began, the Vilna Gaon absolutely put them into Cheirim. And these are facts. There are two volumes done at Hebrew U, Professor Valensky, Zichrono Levracha, who I yet knew when I came in Aliyah, of all the Charamim against the Hasidim, and Charamim signed by the Vilna Gaon. And they were declared Chutz L'Tchom, that these are Apikorsim Gemurim. And when the Alter Rebbe, who was a Gaon Adir, the Baal Tanya, and you see, was a Gaon Adir, The Mishnah Brewer quotes him, Reb Chaim Brisker stood in awe of him. It was a Gaon Adir when he came to Vilna to convince the Vilna Gaon that Hasidus is not what he thinks it is. The Vilna Gaon left Vilna as great a matmid as he was, and he didn't waste a minute. He's not the way we go into Yulim here, Torah Shragi. You're supposed to come and learn for a year. one tiyul after another. I see with Torah Trag, it's unbelievable. You got to write the days they're learning, not the days they're on. It's a bit, that's the me, it butl b'miksats. Anyway, so the Vilna was the greatest matmid. He left Vilna not to be in the same city where the Alter Rebbe is breathing and destroying the avirat tohora, the pure holy air. So many years later, the Vilna Gaon's Talmud Mufak versus Chaim Voloshin, Mori Urebi, Reb Yosef Tov, Alevi Soloveitchik, a direct descendant of Reb Chaim Voloshin. Reb Chaim Voloshin's son-in-law was a Soloveitchik, and Mori Urebi descends, Reb Yosef Alevi Soloveitchik, Mori is a direct descendant of that Soloveitchik, and he went to see to honor, to pay homage to Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who was a direct descendant, door after door, father after father, son after son, of the Alter Rebbe. And I said it at that time, that's an amazing moment when they gave each other the kavod in front of Kol Beit Yisrael. And I can tell you in parentheses, at that time already, the big machloket was starting up here. Rav Shach was declaring Chabad chutz l'tchum, but not just Chabad. He didn't have a positive attitude towards Ger. What you say, Be'ivrit Gur, Hasidit Gur, was mir sagen in Yiddish, Ger Hasidim. And the big rift was beginning that today, I don't have to tell you, there are two Mo'atzat Gedolei Torah, there are two Das Torah. There are endless different newspapers. I can't say any more too, because there's splits upon splits upon splits. And as I said in public in America when I gave a talk on the contemporary, I believe I gave this talk in Young Israel of Kew Gardens, and Kew Gardens Hills, and I think I also gave it, or part of it, I gave it more with Reb Shalom, in Young Israel of West Hempstead, where I worked the talk differently around Reb Shalom Gold, and I big machloiket with him over Satma, because he was rabbi in West Hempstead, so I mentioned his name, and I big machloiket. I had a few hundred people leaning forth to catch every word. This is in their ballpark already. So I need not tell you, in the Hasidic world today, I mentioned Bells. So where is Bells? Who is Bells? You'll ask the Litvakin? Ah, a Chassid. You'll ask the Chassidim? A Litvak, you understand? Because the Bells of Rebbe has been idiosyncratic. He's not the, you can't label him one way or another. So, but this whole machloket was beginning in Israel. I need not tell you, not, I can't repeat in public what I experienced in 1980. Kvot Hashem Hashtetafa. Privately, if you become my students, I'll tell it to you privately. But what I heard with my ears, what I saw, I once took advantage of people I know who used a little protexia to get into a place where there was no room and got in becovered, a seat, this, that, the other thing. What I saw, what I heard, if I hadn't had a Rebbe like the Rav, I don't know. I'd be like those kids, like those parents who came to me. I spoke about it yesterday, the parents who came to me in America, whose kids are living Yiddishkeit, both in America, both here. The rabbis are a bunch of phonies, scandal after scandal. The whole Torah is phony, throwing it all away. Spoke yesterday about a psak I gave in relation to which shul to go to, etc., etc. But that's yesterday. Come back here to today. Thank God, the Rav and the Rebbe, Avat HaTorah, Chassid and Litvak, Bifnei Am V'Yeda. Now, I later learned there's a rabbi in Jerusalem. He's a Talmud of the Rav of a later period. You'll recognize the name, or at least you know his brother. He's not my age. He's younger. So I saw the Rav in his prime. The 50s was the reasons why. I lectured on it. I explained. When I eulogized Dr. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, I made the comparison that David hit Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in his prime, and I hit the Rav in his prime, each one 15 years after they started to teach. So Reb Aaron Adler was a shamus of the Rav in the later years when he needed help. And he's a real good Talmud of the Rav. He's a Talmud Chacham, and he knows. So I later learned he went over to Rebbe he went, he might have been at the Fabrengen, he probably was at the Fabrengen, and because a lot of the Rav's Tamnidim went, and he later went over to Rebbe and said to Rebbe, and this is classic, quintessential Moriyu Rebbe, it echoes what he published in the Morgan Journal in the mid-50s. He asked Rebbe, said to Rebbe, on his own, Rebbe, that you went to the Baal Tanya's great, 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 great grandson. This heals the breach between Hasidim and Mitnagdim. And the Rav said to him, as only the Rav could, no, I didn't have to heal the breach. The breach was healed in Auschwitz, in Treblinka, in Buchenwald, when they killed Hasidim and Litvakim, and their blood intermingled. And that's a very powerful answer. I hope we all take it to heart and live that way. I don't like Jews who think they have a monopoly on truth. Baruch Hashem, there is little pluralism in halacha. The Vahashem zu halacha. There is a lot of pluralism in hashkafa. Open up every page of the Gemara and every page of the Medrash, and you'll find when it comes to hashkafa, we don't paskin. When it comes to halacha, we try to reach a final one way to go. Not always can we achieve it, but at least we try to. Powerful story. Do you know what I'm referring to? With 54, when the Rav was interviewed, when the controversy broke out with the synagogue council. Remember 54, 55, 56, it must be 56 the interview, but the controversy broke out and the Rosh Yeshiva ushered any partnership, and the Rav was interviewed, and why didn't the Rav sign the Issa? And the Rav spoke about Birkenau and Auschwitz and everything. The Nazis didn't ask whether you put on tefillin, whether you were Shomer Shabbos. They killed us all. And that which unites us is much more than that which divides us. What's very interesting is that the Rav Shita lost out in America and won out in Israel. Just think for a minute. Very interesting. In America today, there's no synagogue council. There are very few board of rabbis. The Haredi world is very powerful. The Pooh Report shows, it's amazing. There's just a whole analysis now. I have it here. I believe someone took it yesterday. Did you take it? I gave it out yesterday. I don't know if anyone took it. There was a whole Pooh Report on the Orthodox, that two-thirds of Orthodoxy in America is Haredi, Yeshivish, Hasidish. Two-thirds. But and there's no synagogue council, and no one's going to meet with reform rabbis and conservative rabbis and reconstructionist rabbis. And we have other problems, too, with the Chovevei Torah rabbis. In Israel, just the opposite. Notice what happened last week. Leitzman became Sahar Briyut. Agudat Yisrael, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, the Hasidic one, full integration with the Israeli government. Who are you integrating with? Not everyone is from. Not everyone is Shomer Shabbos. So on that level, there's full integration here. On the religious level, just like the Rav said, on spiritual questions, there we have to give the answer al pi halacha. There a conservative rabbi can play no role. But on the general issues of Jewish survival, economics, morals, anti-Semitism, that which unites us is much more than that which divides us. It's interesting. In Israel, it's worked out that way. It could be there's no comparison. It could be that it had to work out that way because we're running a country. In America, we're not running a country. So you can go into your own shtibble, you can go into your own ghetto, you can walk around with a portable ghetto, as I call the Hasidic dress that's now conquered our world. And you know, even though I come from a different generation, but I'm not, God forbid, I'm not, if someone needs a black hat to remain firm, I've said all the years, let them wear two black hats. I'll buy the second one. And I got to tell you, Yomo, one morning, right in this room, he's leaving the room to go daven. How many black cats do you have? Tell the class. Two black cats. He's leaving the room. I couldn't believe my eyes. I said, I joke around with two black cats, and you're walking out with two black cats. To remain from? No question. But it's in America, you're not running a country. It's different. Here you're running. So it could be that inevitably the Rav had to win out. I say, thank God the Rav went out. Why? Not because of the Rav, not because I'm prejudiced. Because it's very healthy chinuch. Until now, our good Yisrael taught the kids fakery, chicanery. We don't take a ministry, but we take a scum as if he is a minister. Double talk. Untvedera, either or. Don't play games. Don't confuse the youth. Now, they have to say to the youth, we're part of the people, we're part of the government, we're part of the land. We take a ministry. We hope we can reach the day when Kol Banayach Limudei Hashem. But right now we have to make the best of what we have. Beautiful. Honesty. What did you want to say? Wait, slow down. Where were you born?
Where was I born?
Yeah.
In Maryland.
You have an accent that my Bronxians, the eyes that saw Joe DiMaggio play, not the idiots you see today, a guy sitting 250 is a Gadol Hador today. You understand what we're up against in baseball? It's unbelievable. But you do have good pitching, another no-hitter. Unbelievable. Yeah, slow down, clearly.
I'll try and be clear. Sorry. I just wanted to wonder if Rebbe could clarify what exactly was the synagogue council?
Wow. I invite you to, let's see, I discuss it first in Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy. You're familiar with that book?
I've heard of it.
You've heard of it? Four editions already. Editions, not just print. Then I discuss it in The Silver Era. You've heard of that book? Four editions. Then I discuss it in the two volumes of the Rav, which is the fifth printing, and they're robbing me blindly. I don't get a penny anymore in royalties because they sold it out to Israelis, and the Israelis don't have the record. You can't believe what they do. All my future books are going to be published for charity. Shvut Ami, Russian charity, to be Makarov kids from the land that Yomo comes from. Synagogue Council was an organization of Reform Conservative Orthodox temples and synagogues. Got it? Every 2 years they change presidents. And 1-2 years, an Orthodox layman. The next 2 years, conservative. The next 2 years, Reform, etc. Mixed Board of Rabbis, if you saw yesterday's Jerusalem Post, Limud. You know what Limud is?
I don't know.
Okay, so Limud, what does Limud tell you? In this room, Rakefet is speaking on Torah Shabbat Peh. In this room, there's a conservative rabbi explaining why the halacha is no longer relevant and you can eat fish in a treif restaurant. In the third room, there's a woman who's a lesbian, who is a humanist, whose father was Jewish and her mother was not. She is a Reform rabbi, and she's explaining why all that matters in life is do justice, walk humbly with the Lord your God. The halacha is outdated, it is outlandish, outmodish, and has no role in our lives. Got it?
Got it.
That's what we're talking about.
So that interfaith dialogue and those type of things would be accepted under that?
With those, it's not interfaith, it's inter-Jewish dialogue. Yeah, so the Rav had a middle opinion that as far as halacha, we can't have anything to do with them. So in the synagogue council, the Rav insisted any halachic statement is subject to a veto by the Orthodox, obviously. Okay? But on matters of Israel, anti-Semitism, let's say Obama's attitude towards the Jewish people, there we can cooperate with non-Orthodox. That was the Rav's opinion. 11 famous Rosh Yeshiva, including 2 members of the Yeshiva University faculty, Rabbis David Lifshitz and Menachem Mendel Zaks. You've heard these names?
I've heard them.
Okay. They signed the Iser against synagogue council. by the mid-1990s, right-wing orthodoxy had become so strong in America that the synagogue council went bankrupt, no one was interested, and it was abolished. Okay? And that's what we're talking about. And but I made the analogy to Israel, etc. Say that.
And Limud would fit into...
Ah, the Rav Limud, what are you talking about? The Rav would be 1,000% opposed to Limud. Rabbi Lamb went to Limud, his attitude was, Rabbi Luxtein went to Limud, their attitude was, they told me, if I have a chance to teach Torah, I shouldn't be able to teach. All right, there may be something to it. Rakefet thinks differently, but I can be right, I can be wrong. Could be it's open to Machloket, I cannot just tell you my opinion, okay? But I don't want to say the others are wrong. I have to reset. Rabbi Lamb is Rabbi Lamb. He went. The chief rabbi of Vilna did not appear at Limud. When I was invited to be the guest of the London community, I was there for 3-4 weeks teaching. They asked me if I would appear at Limud. I said no. So they organized their own Limud, where Chabatnikim and Rakefet and a few others taught. It was very nice, but it's not their Limud where you have Orthodox, conservative, reform, reconstructionist, humanistic, atheist, agnostics, etc., etc. All that unites them is they claim that they're Jewish. Okay, finally, did anyone else not know what synagogue council was? Raise your hand if you didn't know. I just want to see the level I'm dealing with. Wow. Okay. Wow. Gentlemen, I would advise you to go online, turn to the OU and tell them you want to purchase Revel, Silva, and Washington. Ask them, get together 10 guys, tell them we want a special price, okay? And get the Svarim. Put them away till you finish your Adaya, Gemara, pass all your Bechinot, and then take off 2 months, seclude yourself, and outside of Daf Yomi, make that your daily feast, okay? But do it now, because the books are going to go out of print again, and I can't go through again having people snoring my name to raise money. If someone will say to me, Rebbe, I'll publish it, I'm taking all costs, fine. That's with the Rebel book, someone took all costs. The Silver book, a Talmud of mine had a shnur money. It hurts me. If I went to the shnur money, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be a famous Rosh Yeshiva, a famous president, a famous chancellor. I was offered so many positions. But I can only teach. I don't want to do anything else. But, of course, anything else, I'll be a lo yitzlachnif. But teach, I think I know a little bit. Now, how can I prove I'm right? Eidut, again, I can't repeat all my lectures. But if you go to graduate school and you're going to study Jewish history, how do you write Jewish history? When we're writing Jewish history, we are essentially attempting to predict the past. Please repeat the words. We are attempting to predict the past. So how do you know you can be right? So if you know you're a Daya, you're studying Yisra V'Chetta, there's a concept of Meshiach Lefi Tumo. If a Gentile walks into this room and there's a piece of meat on the table and the Gentile says, oh, that meat is kosher. I delivered it from the kosher butcher. You can take his word for it. He's Meshiach Lefi Tumo. If a Gentile disappears in Eben Ezra, Simon Yud Zion, with the classic Agona, a Gentile comes back and says, oh, what a terrible thing, this Jew was killed on the highway. You can believe him. No one asked him. He's Mashiach Lefi Tumo. Ah, if that's the case, when you go back and try to recreate what happened, the best evidence you can have is when the person was never asked. It's Mashiach Lefi Tumo. I don't want to go on any further, but I'll give you one simple example. When I did my research on Rabbi Revel, so there were people alive who stoned Rabbi Revel. What did I do? I did all the archival research first. Only then did I interview people. Because from the archives, you get a fairly honest picture. No one knew that a dummy named Aaron Arnold Rothkopf is going to be looking at a letter he wrote to Rabbi Revel in 1918, so many years later. So you get a fairly honest picture. When you interview anyone, Most people, Adam Kareve, it's a lot small. I interviewed one rabbi and he told me right away, I should have been president of yeshiva. I was out of New York when Rabbi Revel died. Had I been there, I would have been elected right away. And I'm getting a very prejudiced point of view. I'm seeing it through his eyes. You can't always believe him. Mesiach Lefi Tumo is fabulous. Chabad has interviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of people who had some connection with Chabad. Some of you recall that last year, one morning, the whole area of the offices were closed down. Chabad had set up a whole studio, and they were interviewing a guy named Rakefet. Now, among the interviews, an interview here appears by Rabbi Avraham Pinta. And this interview, which took place this very year, it's not ancient, he's talking about his father. He talks about his life. He was born in 1940 in France. They were running away from Poland, and they lived for a time in Berlin. Then they ran to France, survived the war, settled in Williamsburg. And he talks about his father. And he describes how his father had gone to Berlin. Berlin, we'll talk about it shortly, was a magnet, and it attracted the best minds from Eastern Europe. And in Berlin was Reb Chaim Heller. Reb Chaim Heller, who we spoke about so many times, the father substitute for the Rav when Moriah Rebbe was in Berlin. Reb Chaim Heller had established there the Beit Medrash Elyon. The Beit Medrash Elyon was for people in Ushas and Priskim backwards and forwards and wanted to be exposed to scientific knowledge. Reb Chaim Heller had a PhD and knew every ancient language. The man was a genius of geniuses. I yet knew Reb Chaim Heller. His grandson was my classmate. I read about it in Washington, how I met Reb Chaim Heller. And Issy Perlmutter, his grandson, if you know Issy, he lives in Piskansev Mizrach, if I'm not mistaken. He should live and be well, a great, great individual. Issy was Reb Chaim Heller's, his mother was Reb Chaim Heller's daughter. And one time I was playing ball with Issy in front of the yeshiva. We were high school kids. It was during the summer. We had a shear. We had insisted. I led the drive with Mr. Abrams, give us a shear during the summer. We had a Rebbe, Rev Shmuel Feivreshevitz, and Altamira, survived Rev Shankai, later taught in BTA, Zichrona Levracha. He was our Rebbe during the summer. And after we learned and had lunch, we played ball. And while we're playing ball, this Jew comes over, tall, distinguished, and I look at him and I recognized him from pictures. It was Rabbi Soloveitchik. And he says to the kid I'm playing with, Yisrael, I azay de vilach sen, your grandfather wants to see you. Come with me. Come with me. And I couldn't believe it. Rabbi Soloveitchik is taking my friend. And I followed. I snuck in back of him. And he took him into the graduate school, Bernard Revel, and the Rub of Reb Chaim Heller was in the middle of teaching. There was a recess now, and Reb Chaim Heller had sent the Rav to find Yisrael. And Reb Chaim Heller hugged him, kissed him, Aneinikol, this is your continuity. So that's how I got to know Reb Chaim Heller. Now, Reb Chaim Heller, you went into Reb Chaim Heller. Believe me, with all due respects, no one coming into Gris Kolel would dare to go into Reb Chaim Heller. But if you knew Shas and Paiskim backwards and forwards, and you wanted to go even further and broaden, then you went into Reb Chaim Heller. So he tells the story how his father went into Reb Chaim Heller. Reb Chaim Heller asked him about his background. He starts interviewing him, and he sees his father knows how to learn. When he was through, Rabbi Heller said, quote, you can remain here. You passed the test. You can be part of this group. And if you have any difficulties, you can ask these two lions, the two Aryot, lions, that's a rabbinic expression for giants of Torah. And with that, Reb Chaim Heller pointed to two people who were sitting there, Rabbi Schneerson, the future Rebbe, and Rabbi Soloveitchik, the future Rav. So you understand, this is unbelievable testimony. Meshiach lefi tuma, where you see that the Rav and the Lubavitcher Rebbe knew each other. So I absolutely take issue with those that said they met once or twice and had no relationship, and people create stories, and it doesn't matter what your name is. You can have the finest name in the world and can be a member of the family, but facts are facts. And the conclusion I reached last May, yes, there was not in America an intimate relationship in the sense that the Rav and the Rebbe were in touch with each other week day and week out. They were in two different worlds. The Rebbe was a Rebbe. The Rav was a Rosh Yeshiva. The Rav, when he had questions, problems, halakha, he turned to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he began that with his cousin, spoke it over. He turned to Rav Aaron Kotler because he had great... Rav Aaron and the Rav had a very unique relationship. They were both giants of learning. But the respect that the Rav and the Rebbe had for each other cannot be questioned whatsoever if we are honest savants of Torah history. And now, new material. Berlin. And here we come to one of the most fascinating aspects of the Rebbe's life. And I'll give you my own opinion, how I understand it. The facts are facts. My interpretation may or may not be correct. I throw it out. That Berlin was this great magnet, no one can deny. Every great mind from Eastern Europe wound up in Berlin. It's a who's who in the most famous Torah personalities, the Rav, the Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, Rabbi Avraham Yehoshua Heschel, later to be the great rabbi, Professor Heschel, went into Machshava, could have been a Hasidic Rebbe, brother of Hasidic Rebbe, son of a Hasidic Rebbe, cousins of endless Hasidic Rebbeim, the whole Rishon dynasty, anyone named Heschel, interrelated. Did he remain Orthodox? In his own practice, absolutely. I can tell you from his own cousins who knew him well, there's an expression in Yiddish, et nishva felta mincha. Anyone know what that means? You see, that he never missed the mincha. No, what's the great compliment? He never missed the mincha. To daven shachrit, you can't forget. You wake up in the morning, you know you have to daven. To daven marav, you can have the busiest day in the world, but before you go to sleep, you know you have to daven. Mincha, you're running in circles, you're caught up with this, with that. I don't have to tell you, we have records of over 100 years ago when Dembitz, who was a lawyer in Philadelphia, asked the judge to recess the court for 15 minutes so he could recite his afternoon prayers. And the judge recessed the court. So mincha is at times very difficult. I can tell you I've never missed davening shachris in my life. I never missed davening mincha in my life. Never missed davening mariv in my life. Mincha I missed twice. When, in the 1950s, when the middle of the year in MTA, we suddenly had 2 weeks off. Until then, I was used to davening mincha in class, davening in shir, davening at the end of shir. And suddenly we had 2 weeks off. Twice it happened to me in the 1950s that I finally remembered I have to daven mincha. It was winter. The sun sets early. Those are the only 2 times I ever missed mincha and had a daven marav twice. But shachris marav you don't miss? Someone who doesn't miss mincha, now I have a streak since 1954, 1953, not missing mincha, so I arrived. If you can say about me, et nisht fafelt a mincha. So Professor Heschel didn't miss a mincha, but he was an interesting character, that goes without saying. And as I said, as I spoke about yesterday, I spoke about many times, he and Professor Liebman, he had two giants at the seminary, but their relationships were not as simple, because the Professor Liebman was kulo Torah. He had no room in his heart for dashanut and chassidus. He was very different than the Rav, and he was kulo halacha. And Professor Heschel, in his eyes, was an Amoret. He was a philosopher. He wrote, you know, his Sfarim are fabulous. The earth is the Lord, the Sabbath. It's fabulous writing. The Rav said, I wish I could write on the level that Professor Heschel writes. That's an absolute quote from the Rav. But they didn't speak the same language, Professor Liebman and Professor Heschel. No, who else came to Berlin? The greatest woman to live in the 20th century. Give me her name, Jay, no? Nachama Leibovitz, you get it? A lady who taught in this very building, who I knew so well. She also went to Berlin. It was just amazing, and the list goes on and on and on. Now, right away, you have to ask the question, and this question we've asked 1,000 times over, and I've lectured in my life from 1,000 different, without exaggeration, 1,000 different vantage points. And of course you have to ask it with the Rebbe as well. I'll give you sources in a minute, but let me ask the question. Tell me, we just davened this morning. We just said 3 brachot on Lima Torah. La asok bedivrei Torah. Rakefet is given Emily Shun, what lasok means, the Lashon lasok, and has to be complete, total involvement. The Rav always quoted the Taisvus and Bracha, that how come on a sukkah you make a bracha every time you go into a different sukkah? In one day you can eat in 5 different sukkahs and make different bracha, repeat the bracha, I should say. And when it comes to lasok with different Torah, you make one bracha in the morning and you never make a bracha again. You eat, you hear the news, you go back, you learn, you open, you close, and yet it's one bracha. And of course, the Taisvus, the Lo Miyashne Minei Torah, is something you cannot forget. Your whole personality has to be imbued by Torah. Everything you do has to be imbued by Torah. No, V'Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Well, this raises a very interesting question. I don't have to tell you, aren't we going through this question in Israel? Aren't we going through this question in England today, in Belgium, to a certain degree in the United States? How is there time to study anything else besides Torah? A very legitimate question. I found out that Lakewood today has a deal with some college, with some program, and you can go to Lakewood and you can get credit and you can wind up getting a degree in accountancy. When I went to Lakewood, they told me that Rabarin chose Lakewood because the only college within 100 miles radius of Lakewood was an agricultural college. And Jewish boys in Chutz Laaretz don't go to here. You go to Rehovot. Here, agriculture is a mitzvah d'oraita. It's a different story. Wow. To learn agriculture is a yishuv binyan aretz in the full sense of the word. But when I learned in Lakewood, if anyone said he would waste time going to college, they would tell me he's a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, tainted, fruitless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, repetitious, malevolent, no good, eisvach, trumpenik, pushtak. Get the message? Wow, guys going to college. How do you, how can the Rebbe go to Berlin? How can the Rav go to Berlin? Now, a lot has been written on this topic. I need not tell you the question of Tachnut HaLibah in the State of Israel, the core curriculum in English, Tachnut HaLibah in Matan Hebrew, math, science, computers, English. A lot of heartache takes place over this topic. I want to quote once again from Larger Than Life. Let me just, again, I spoke about it in length last year, but I see some young, beautiful, handsome faces staring at me. I never want to have a problem again where I mention synagogue council, which to me is like mentioning Aleph Bet, and you're looking at me, how do you read Ketav Rashi? Reb Shimon Deitch, who I know personally, is the Lyoshner Rebbe. He was a normal Chabadnik. And with the death of the Rebbe and the Messianic movement, he was turned off by what was happening in Chabad. And he went out on his own. He gave up his profession. He was an accountant. He was a controller. Very brilliant individual. Very knowledgeable. And he became a Rebbe in Borough Park. He took the title Lyuzhny Rebbe. Lyuzhny Rebbe is where the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, actually lived, Lyuzhny. And he took the title Lyuzhny Rebbe, and he's a Rebbe until today. He's very famous. He built a big museum of, what is it, based upon artifacts from the Bible in Brooklyn. I understand the museum got contributions from non-Jews, artifacts. They had collections. Tell me the museum is worth endless millions of dollars today, what he has there. And when he first became Rebbe, he attempted to write a biography of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he remained loyal to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but he felt that the Lubavitcher Rebbe has to be viewed in human context. The coloration of the Lubavitcher Rebbe has to be, he was a mortal. And he would not accept any of this messianic, miraculous overtones that were added to the Rebbe. As far as I know, only two volumes came out of his projected 5 or 6 volume biography. Some Chabadnikim criticized him. I find him very interesting. He attempts to be scholarly. That's why he met with me. He asked to meet me. He contacted me. And I can't go into all the details now. It'll take too long. But he needed guidance. How do you write scholarship? How do you handle criticism? How do you know what's right? How do you know what's wrong? You know, you hear so many different stories. It's not simple questions, and there are no simple answers. But his 2 volumes, he did his research. Ad Sheyado Magat, quoting the Gemara Nida. He went as far as a human being could go on many topics, including the whole topic of Berlin. He actually corresponded with the University of Berlin, where the Rebbe and the Rebbe studied. And it's even more revealing because despite the fact that the Allies bombed Berlin and bombed Germany, their archives survived in the university. They actually were able to answer his questions. And when my student, who we spoke about yesterday, Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro, did his research on Rabbi Phil Yaakov Weinberg, right? He also corresponded with Berlin about Rabbi Weinberg, about Rabbi Soloveitchik, and they actually got answers and Xerox copies of letters, of applications that these people wrote. And it's still on file. It's an amazing thing with all the bombing and all the destruction of Germany that survived. Now, I'm quoting from Larger Than Life. I'm quoting beginning on page 62, an entire chapter on the question of how the Rebbe came to Berlin. I'm quoting from volume 2. Now, there's no question that Lubavitch, through the first 5 Lubavitcher Rebbes, totally disowned secular studies. No Rebbe from the Baal Tanya on was ever credited with having gone outside Shas and Paiskim. Now, it is true, obviously, from Shas and Paiskim, you can learn a great deal, and I don't have to go any further than the Rambam Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, where the Rambam goes on to many calculations, quotes non-Jewish sources, the Rambam Hilchot Yesodei Torah, the first 4 Prakim, Aristotle, etc., Mora Nevuchim. Right within the Torah world, you can pick up a lot of non-Jewish sources. But the first 5 Rebbeim didn't study formally in any context outside Shas and Paiskim and Torah Tashem Tamima. Now the 6th Rebbe, if you recall last year, I hit upon a topic which I never thought the world got so enthused, the communications that came in, and I lived it. To me it was, I lived it, I know what I'm talking about. It all happened on Washington Avenue in the Bronx. What am I talking about? The Malachim. That in the late 20s, an old-time Lubavitcher, Reb Chaim Avraham Dov Ber Levine, leaves for America, opens up a shtibble on Washington Avenue, and leaves Lubavitch in anger, and forms a new movement, Malachim, Angels, on the American scene. Now, we spoke about it, and I can't repeat myself, but it's a very fascinating topic, the Malachim. Remember, thrown out of Torah Vadash, they're too frum for Torah Vadash. And you can't deny it, because there's a tshuva, Rabbi Yoshua Baumol, where he gives permission to throw them out. And even Artscroll in their biography, and Rabbi Shlagel Feivelman the Lovitch, has to mention it. It's too well known. Although the way they mention it, they try to soft pedal it a little bit. But it's an amazing thing today. No one's going to believe you that kids were thrown out of Torah Vadash for their tzitzit out. When I went to YU, only one kid wore his tzitzit out. And what he suffered from the rebellion, what Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik did to that kid, I cannot repeat in public. And you know what became of the kid? The only kid in YU who wore a tzitzit out. The chazan in the biggest conservative temple in Detroit. His daughter is spiritual leader, a rabbi. Doesn't use the title. She uses the title, I think, Rosh HaKahal of a, I believe it's an Orthodox synagogue, semi-Orthodox, on the Upper West Side near Harlem, if you know what I'm referring to. I think it's called Orech Eliezer. It's the continuity of, I think so. I hope I'm not confusing it. But that's his daughter. And his other daughter, who had been my student, married to a guy from Gateshead. They apologized. I was Shavuos in Stanford. I gave so many Shayurim. They were going from Stanford, Connecticut, to be with their sister-in-law, the rabbi for Shavuos, and chose to hear her speak, teach over a dummy from Jerusalem named Aaron Rakefet. So, all right. But today in YU, Baruch Hashem, I always say you can tell in my classroom who the Rebbe is and who the students are. The Rebbe's the only one who sits it or not out. The students are all Baruch Hashem that sits it around and keep them out. Don't let the Rebbe, don't be like the Rebbe. He's from a different generation, believe me. So why did he leave Lubavitch? They're not frum enough. Because the fifth Rebbe, Rav Shalom Dov Ber, hired Rav Levine to teach his son, Reb Yosef Yitzchak, and he caught Reb Yosef Yitzchak reading Sfarim of Haskalah, non-Torah books. And he was furious. So you see, already Reb Yosef Yitzchak knew a little bit about what's going on in the big world beyond him. Now, this is an amazing discovery of Rabbi Deutsch. The seventh Rebbe, who was not the son of Reb Yosef Yitzchak, but the son-in-law, and he grew up in a different environment altogether with his father, and we spoke about it last year, his childhood. Seventh Rebbe already made a deal with his father that a few hours a day, remember the deal? I think the father said 16 hours a day he has to learn. Shas, Paiskin, Chassidus, Kabbalah, and the other 8 hours he can learn what he wants, do what he wants, sleep, eat, and learn. And the Rebbe was blessed. I spoke about this last year. The Vilna Gaon was blessed. Read the Hakdam of the Bnei of the Vilna Gaon to the Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim. Certain people don't need sleep. You take Rabbi Steve Riskin, his secret, how he accomplished what he accomplished in life, he sleeps 2 to 3 hours a night, at least in his prime. I was once on a plane with him coming to New York. I got off the plane. I was dead. Wiped out. I was staying on the west side. So I went to daven in Lincoln Square Synagogue. He's davening at the same minyan, just got off the plane. He is already dressed with a suit and a tie, and he's wide awake. And he told me he has to meet with Balabhatma. He has to make a few million dollars that morning for his institutions here. I couldn't believe it. But he said to me, yeah, and that's his life. He can be up till 3 in the morning, gets a few hours sleep, gives a dafyomi as if he slept 7-8 hours. The Rebbe, Baruch Hashem, made a deal with his father, and he kept it. Now, the Rebbe is dreaming about Berlin. It's hard for us to comprehend what a pull Berlin had on the religious Torah learned youth. Like the Rav would say, who would dream 15 years later they'd be killing every Jew, man, woman, and child? Hard to believe. This is why we have no guarantees in life. You can have all the democracy in the world. God have mercy. What can yet happen in countries that have democracies? Hitler came to power in a democratic fashion. Let's never forget it. So with all that we have, England, France today, Obama's America, it is absolutely frightening. Al Pidin, I still haven't found the heta, how you can live in America. It's beyond my comprehension to live in a country where the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach are abolished. Beyond my comprehension. If you have to live outside of Israel, there are three reasons you're allowed. The Gemara at the end of Ketuvah, the Rambam Hilchot Malachim. Then the only country you can live in is Putin's Russia. And when he finishes conquering the Ukraine, Yomo will be able to go back there in dignity. Yomo, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Relax yourself. Don't correct me with the facts. Try to understand what the Rebbe is driving at. Gentlemen, Babaji Rebbe was evidently troubled by this question. You know how we know he was troubled by the question? Who was the one that the Lubavitcher Rebbe corresponded with? Who did he look up to? The Rocket Sheva Gaon, Rabbi Yosef Rosen, the Rav of the Hasidic community in Dvinsk, Riga. The Rocket Sheva? No, have you heard the name? Ravikat Shavagon, Rabbi Yosef Rosen, the Tzofna Paneach, the greatest genius of the first part of the 20th century. He was such a genius that we don't passim like him because his mind was way above everyone else. He could argue with Tosfos. We don't passim like him. That's different lectures of Rock Cafe. We go in a normal, the Torah has given for normal people. The Torah, you cannot give the Torah just to great geniuses. Halacha kebeit Hillel. Be yamot HaMashiach, then it'll be like Beit Shammai. There are reasons why. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who had a mind like the Rocket Sheva, corresponded with the Rocket Sheva. As I said last year, there's even a rumor, unsubstantiated, that the Rebbe had smicha from the Rocket Sheva. But there's no question they corresponded, because both in the Rebbe's archives and in the Rocket Sheva's archives, they found correspondence between them. Believe it or not, in the Rocket Sheva's archives that were salvaged through miracles by his daughter and his student who had succeeded himself in Fuchs, they were all killed by Hitler. His daughter went back from Israel. She was widowed. Her husband had been the chief rabbi of Petach Tikva, I believe, or Ramat Gan, Sitra, I think Petach Tikva. He died young. His daughter went back to sort out her father's papers, and she was caught in Eastern Europe when Hitler came in. She died on Kiddush Hashem. They got everything to America with miracles. Part of it wound up in YU. YU raised money, and they sat with big community chachamim and published a number of sfarim. Reb Menachem Kasher took over. Part of it came back to Israel in the archives. And you can see the letter and the quote in Larger Than Life, Volume 2. The Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, writes to the Rocket Sheva, Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu, are we allowed to study secular subjects? And he writes to the Rebbe, And he quotes what I quoted to you before. He quotes the Rambam. He quotes the Rambam in Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh. He quotes the Rambam in Yesodei HaTorah. And he says, you see that the Rambam permitted it. The Rambam did it. Okay? So are we allowed to do it? And you know what's amazing? We cannot find the tshuva of the Rakat Shava. There is another tshuva that did survive the passage of time, where the Rakat Shava was asked a similar question, and as usual, the Rakat Shava, you know the way he wrote, va'ayin, 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 and look here, and look, and you have to put together his thought process. It will appear from that other tshuva that the Rakat Shava took the attitude that certainly when it comes to mathematics and pure science, there is no question you can study secular subjects. This question, which reverberates from the 20s into the 30s and is later sharpened, and I'll be very brief now, of course, you can talk about this many, many, many hours, is, of course, Rav Shimon Schwab, who later becomes the rabbi of the German community in Washington Heights. Rabbi Schwab asked this very same question, and he received an answer, ultimately, from Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz, which was published in Birchat Shmuel Tekedushin, pages 48 to 52. He received an answer already from the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Avram Yitzchak Bloch. He received an answer orally from the Gera Rebbe, Rav Avram Mordechai Alta. And this question, we deal with this problem until this very moment. Can you study? What can you study? And the question hangs fire. But there's no question that the Rebbe asked the Rakat Shava. He wanted to know, could he go to Berlin? And then Deutsch brings evidence where Eltere Hasidim, outstanding Hasidim, heard the Rebbe arguing with his father-in-law, heard them yelling at each other when the seventh Rebbe-to-be made up his mind that he is going to Berlin. And he said, Hasidim testified that the sixth Rebbe was not satisfied. He was worried. He was apprehensive. He did not give it his full blessing. And halacha lemaisa, this is absolutely true. And this is something that haunts us. I know graduates of YU, brilliant, Talmidim of the Rav, terrific minds. Some of them got smicha, left the yeshiva, went on to university, conquered the world. And some of them left Yiddishkeit. When you look into the book put out by Elif, Remembering the Rav, one of the main interviews of the earliest Talmidim of the Rav was a world-famous professor who afterwards was no longer Shomer Shabbos. I know someone who was on a level of Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and came from tremendous Litvish Yichus and left the yeshiva. Smicha went on, PhD, mentioned for a Nobel Prize. For a period in his life, left Yiddishkeit. A period. Thank God he came back. Don't want to go further, but his own children learned in the top yeshiva. I know someone right now who studied in Stern College, ran away from Beis Yaakov, left Stern College, went on to the PhD, finest university. A Yiddishkeit? One half of what it used to be. And these are, it's a valid problem. I don't want to tell you, and you'll understand later why I'm saying this, but I don't want to sweep the problem under the carpet. Person, we're human beings, we're influenced. You meet people. I know my grandsons went into the army, so when they went into the army, a lot of them had the same reaction. You know, the chiloniyim that have real commitment to the state of Israel. Sort of in the yeshiva, they were taught, you know, we're the ones that have the real commitment. But the chiloniyim, they want to go to Miami Beach, they want to go to Los Angeles, they want to go to Berlin. The Milky's there are cheaper, etc., etc. And I remember I just had a discussion, I still remember it like yesterday, when my grandson in the artillery unit was telling me there are people who come to Miluim, give up big businesses, and come with gusto, with joy. And then he says, they're not from, he says, you've got to admire them. I said, absolutely. But the problem is real. Now, I'm running out of time. The problem is real. I mean, I'm running out of time today, Be'ezrat Hashem. The Rebbeinu Shlomo will give us a lot of time, but that's the next 120 years. Baruch Ator, Melech Olam, Shekol, Yavid, Berol. Now, Deutsch makes an interesting comparison. He compares it to the Rav going to Berlin. And you all know that the Rav's background, what he came from, total opposition to secular studies, total opposition to Zionism, total opposition to Mizrahi. And in one talk I gave in New York and Lawrence, I said Rabbi Chaim Wasserman was opposed to this, to that, and to religion, and to secular Zionism. So Yossi Nussbaum got hold of me after davening, after I spoke, and he said, Rabbi, that's not right. He was opposed to any form of Zionism. Nussbaum is right, Rakefet is wrong. I over-popularized it, but okay. And the Rav going to Berlin, his father, his mother. So first of all, I have to tell you, there are other factors involved. In the Rav's case, had he remained in Poland, he would have been drafted into the Polish army. So as I write with a very long footnote in the Rav, and that footnote was fine-tuned many times over with the Baron and Tova, Tova should live and be well, Yibada L'chaim Aruchim V'tovim, it was a big catalyst. Better than being in the army is going to Berlin and studying. But it's much deeper than that. The Rav's parents actually were not a perfect match as far as Hashkafa goes. Rav Moshe, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, was much more narrow. He was the son of Rav Chaim. Rav Itzim Pesha was a scion of the Feinstein family. Rav Elia Feinstein, Pruzhana Rav, Rav Elia Pruzhana, was already much more open than Rav Chaim. And she already grew up in an atmosphere where they discussed Haskalah, they discussed Zionism, they discussed secular studies, and she was very much in favor of the Rav's going. Rav Moshe went through a process where he broadened. There are no two ways about it. It was his wife's influence, the life influence upon him. But Rav Moshe, by 1925, 1926, when the Rav went to Berlin, his hashkafa already had broadened. It wasn't the same as 10 years earlier. How do we know all this? We have a beautiful memoir of the Rebbe's sister, Shulamit Meiselman, the Soloveitchik heritage. Highly recommended to you. I knew Shulamit very well, and you can depend upon everything she wrote to be 90% accurate. There always is a certain percentage where you digest it through your own prisma, but you can depend upon her to be basically totally accurate. And she describes how the father and mother differed, but ultimately the father came around. And she describes what happened to him, quoting from Larger Than Life, but you can find this also in the Soloveitchik heritage by Shulamit. You know who Shulamit that Dr. Shulamit Meisman, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, you know who she was. That's the mother of Rabbi Moshe Meiselman. Those of you that learned in Torah Moshe should know Rabbi Moshe Meiselman. This is his mother. And she describes what happened in Warsaw. Early one morning, the bell rang. Opening the door, I was confronted by a very distinguished-looking rabbi. Now, she doesn't write who the rabbi was, but she told me who it was. It was Reb Yitzchak Kosofsky, who later becomes the Av Beit of Johannesburg, who was a nephew of Reb Chaim Ezer Grzynski. If I'm not mistaken, he later has a son-in-law from YU, Rabbi Nissen Shulman. Rabbi Shulman, who was a chaplain in the Navy, who asked the Rav the famous Shaila about Gentav Sheni, there was going to be an inspection, are you allowed to shave? Because in the Navy at that time, I don't know what the laws are today, everyone has to be clean shaven. I write about it. In the Rav, he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchak Kosofsky, if I'm not mistaken. So evidently Rabbi Yitzchak Kosofsky went through a period in life where he broadened, but here he is knocking on the door, the nephew of Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski of Vilna, who was very close to the Rav, right or wrong, and related to the Rebbetzin. Tanya and Reb Chaim Moshe's wife were both great-grandchildren of Reb Yisrael Salanta. So there was a marital relationship between Reb Chaim Moshe and the Rav as well. Opening the door, I was confronted by Vetek. I assumed he had come to visit my grandfather. But he asked for my father, who was in the kitchen talking to my mother and my aunt. Father immediately went to receive his guest. Suddenly we heard excited noises coming from the direction of father's study. My mother looked at me, but did not say a word. Then we heard an uproar like the sound of thunder. Rushing into the study, we found father shouting at his guest, quote, "How dare you come to me with such a message? Who sent you? What right do you have to meddle in my affairs? If I want to send my son to the University of Berlin, it's my business and no one else's. My son will never come under alien influences. He is so infused with Talmudic knowledge that his religious beliefs will remain firm. Take a message back to your friends. Yosef Dov HaSalabetchik will one day be the world spokesman for Talmudic Judaism." His guest, however, refused to accept this answer. Quote, "No, that will never happen. Our Jewish youth will not be led by someone who is studying philosophy at a goyish school. Remember your father, Reb Chaim. He did not believe in secular education. He fought against the introduction of secular knowledge in the Voloshin Yeshiva. Your brother, Reb Velvel, is against secular education. To give your son private instruction is understandable, but to send him to the university is an entirely different story. Reb Moshe, listen to me. You are subjecting him to up because him. We are your friends. We are warning you for your sake and for the sake of your son's future. Bring him home." End quote. Quite powerful. Not so simple. Not so simple. And you see the attitude. It's one thing privately to read Haskalah Sfarim, to study encyclopedias. I know people, Gedolei Yisrael, went through encyclopedias, remembered it all. But to go to the University of Berlin, and you see Deutsch is making the analogy that just what happened with the Rav, it's exactly what the Rebbe was going through. The argument, the controversy with his father-in-law, the correspondence with the Ragachever. And I'll go one just little step further, but I want to tell you in parentheses, what do we see, Jay, from this memoir? You know what you see from here? The Soloveitchiks also had tempers. You see? Reb Moshe, you hear what Shulamit is describing? You remember what we saw on my time with the Rav in class? Ribbono shel Olam, if you got him started, if you keyed him off, he had a temper, okay? The Rav once said in Moriah, we have these recordings today, it's like fabulous. The only thing is, you have to know how, you know, I'm speaking like a guy now, you have to know Yiddish. If you don't know Yiddish, you cannot know Torah, period. Rafa, you know what I told you, I learned in Lakewood. What did they teach me in Lakewood? The Torah was given in what language? Yiddish. Don't forget it. And in Lakewood, they don't lie to you. The Torah was...
You
got to live it. You have to live it. You can't teach it. No one taught me. I lived it. I have to bring back the dead. If I could take you back to the seventh grade when we first... Oh, Rebbeim, what can I tell you? They came from off the boat from Shanghai. They didn't speak a word of English. What can I tell you? These kids today, it's a Rachmanis, you know, they think Yiddishkeit is... We have to inspire, and we have to be pure, and we can't look at the scandals. And I repeat again what I've said so many times, if you had one or two Rebbeim in your life who were kulo Torah, you're doing okay. It's a terrible situation. What do you say to a mother whose only child, what she did for that child on Almana, and he was a frum kid. He's in Washington today, big shot, successful, and he davened in Fraudel shul. And I only use his referring that Fraudel. Now, what do you say to that kid? I mean, your mind can't even, my mind, I mean, I remember Rabbi Yeruchim Yerelik Alchetz, used to talk about the Alchetz. He said, who could believe that there's so many different sins? But mention two and dust. And he would say, you see how bad a human being can be? Read those al-chaits. No, could anyone ever put in there al-chaits shatanul fanecha that we put in cameras into a mikveh to watch nude women? You would say, it's impossible. Who could do this to a mikveh? A rabbi? Who, a Talmud Chacham? I just want to go one step further. So, they had tempers. So the Rav said in Moriah, he said, yeah, I know I have a temper. And lately I've been taking lessons to control it. But he says, I still got a long way to go. And the whole audience broke into laughter. You follow? But never, the Rav lost his temper, but not for good reasons. With his wife's death and his illness, he mellowed, you know, and that you see in the documentary on the Rav, The Lonely Man of Faith, that a guy named Rakefet brought into the world single-handedly, unfortunately. So with $1 million from, I got to give credit, Abe Levovitz, who's, I go back, my wife's grandparents davened in his father's shul, and that's how the relationship begins. So you see there where Professor Soloveitchik talks about his father and others, how he mellowed Aaron Adler, Jesse Adler who's interviewed. That's Aaron Adler's older brother. So you look at that, you'll see. So I want to end off. And the same thing, he brings sources here, very interesting, that Rabbi Avraham Yehoshua Heschel, when he announced he wanted to go to Berlin, his father, his cousin, his relatives gave him the devil, the same argument. How dare you? You'll become an apikores. Look what you'll be exposed to. And finally, one big Rebbe from the Rishina dynasty said, all right, you can go. But make clear that this is only for you, not for anybody else. Now that is very, very important, because there's one problem that has to underlie everything I'm saying, and we'll pick up here next week. A very simple question. The Rebbe goes to Berlin, the Rebbe knows everything, the Rebbe gets a degree in being an engineer, an electrical engineer. I have grandchildren studying the same subject today. The Rebbe gets a degree. And yet the same Rebbe, if Alex Glassman came to him at the age of 16 and said, Rebbe, I'm graduating high school. What should I do next? The Rebbe would tell you, go to yeshiva, learn full-time, Morristown, Crown Heights. Not one word about college. Not one word about university. Rebbe, I want to go to college. I want to go to university. No. Right or wrong? I can tell you from experience with students. And the same Rebbe knew everything in the world. And the same Rebbe could meet with the biggest professors, the biggest musicians, the biggest artists, and encourage them in their fields and answer their questions and help them do their thesis. What's happening here? Very fascinating question. We will deal with it. My dear students, first of all, I hope all of you will come back, and I hope even more you'll come to the Sunday class, because I'm sick and tired of being called an Amharitz. I don't care if you call me an ignoramus after you've heard 57 years worth of Shayurim from me. Then you have a right to say I'm an ignoramus, and I don't mind it. But to come just to this class, and then I wind up being introduced all over the world, the great historian. What the heck is going on here? Great historian. That Loma Leva, Loma Rid. But at least Selah Kefet knows a little bit of Torah Hashem Tamima. I suffer. And I'm very serious. If you're going to come, I hope you take both classes. But if you can only take one, Sunday is the day, not Monday. Now, we're in the history of Torah in modern times. I could have given one lecture on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but I wouldn't be just doing justice to my soul, my conscience, and kol haTorah kula. We've had no leader like the Lubavitcher Rebbe since Churban HaBayit. This man had influence on the entire world, and certainly the entire Jewish world. It's amazing that today, so many years after his death, his influence is greater than ever and continues to expand. I want to understand the man, I want to understand his message, I want to understand his life. And this is why I'm spending so many minutes on the Lubavitcher Rebbe before I go further with the nitty-gritty of Torah in the United States. What we did today, we finished out the 1980 Farbrengen. That's a very important moment. I thank Chabad. They went and made a copy for me from the archives of a video of the whole Farbrengen. And you can see the Rav, it's primitive. It has to be, someone has to give a few mil to edit it properly and put it out on a CD today, a DVD, I should say. But that would be a tremendous contribution to understanding the relationship of the Rav and the Rebbe. Berlin, as much as it hurts to talk about it, what an attraction Berlin was. I spoke yesterday about not hating every German. You have to hear the shiur. I told the story with an officer in the Air Force, the German Air Force. But one thing for sure, Berlin was gold in the 1920s. And look how many people wound up there. And look what they had to go through, as the Rub said more than once, and Professor Twetsky, his son-in-law, Zaychatzadik Lavracha, speaks about it. It's published. How the Rebbe said to his children, you'll never understand what I had to go through to get general knowledge. And here you see it with the Rebbe. Now, first of all, I want to remind you, next Sunday we pick up again, 5:15, the Ribbono Shel Olam Shekhiv Koach, I start teaching. Next Monday, 9:05, the Ribbono Shel Olam Shekhiv Koach, I start teaching. I get a Mazel Tov, a grandson got engaged this Friday. With this, I go over. Until now, I had 7 grandchildren married, 7 not. Now I go over. It's soon going to be 8 and 6. And Kanayin Hara, Ribbono Shel Olam gives us nachat, and thank God the children, and these are all children who fought in many wars, and thank God everyone is well today. Yitzchak, this is all for you. There were 3 shurim over the summer. A lot of weeks he did not teach. Very fascinating material. You'll see the man. It's Rav Usher Weiss. He's a Mayan HaMitgaber. You have another Talmud of his here, Professor Mori Tarragon. If anyone is into Gematrias, I gave a copy of this to Yomo. Yomo is still shaking. This proves that Mashiach is coming this year. I only have one comment. If he doesn't come, what do we do? But boy, he is convincing. Here are CDs, DVDs. What do I call these CDs I've picked up? This is Rabbi Yosef Mizrahi. I don't know who he is. He's evidently an Israeli talking to Americans. If anyone will take this, I'd like to hear your comment. I find it amazing. These Americans are sitting in America and they want to kill every Arab. And Arak Kefet, who's a big right-winger sitting in Israel, says it's forbidden to kill every Arab. Every Arab, you have to give an Arab dignity. He's a human being. If he lifts up a rock, that's a different story. But I can't believe the response of the audience. Here is Moshe Yizdi with his outreach. This is the secret of happiness. These tapes, fabulous. If anyone is into music, this is the Willick family sings. This was given out at one of their family affairs. All the Willick children and son-in-law are in it. 1 second, I have a lot of freebies today. Because Morty, this is for you. This is for your family. This is for Rabbi Shneur Cutler Shidduch. You're going to find out what they owe Chabad. If anyone is into Chabad, this is a scholarly article on the 6th Rebbe meeting Zygmunt Freud. Okay? Alex, this is for you. This Chabad, why a formula secular woman is running a Chabad center. It's beautiful, beautiful, the interviews with these people, the impact the Rebbe had. This is what we spoke about last year, the interview with Mrs. Rachel Goldberg, that's the daughter of Dr. Nissen Mendel, she's the daughter of the Rebbe's first Melamed, Rebbe Shneur Zalman Valinkin, and she describes this relationship. She's married. How does it tie in? She ties in with Nissen Mendel. And that's how she describes the relationship. Beautiful. This is about a Lubavitcher Chassid, Reb Gershon Chanovich, 1922 to 2005. Worth reading about this person's life and commitment and how he doesn't let money blind him. Kol HaKavod. Here are two copies of the most beautiful thing that happened recently in all our tzaras. This was a gleam of light. If you recall, I told you a story with my grandson, Golan, who just got out of the army last week after 4 years in a very elite unit and was chosen as the Chayil Mitztayein at the end of 4 years of that unit. So remember, I told you they once called up the Tzanchanim to God in Yam HaMelech because there were terrorists from Jordan. They were, generally, we don't have a problem with Jordan. This time they were terrorists. So they had to call up not Miluim people, but the real McCoy. So one time my grandson, Afiel HaChayilim, came off guard duty Shabbos morning, went into a hotel, and dead tired, sat down to make Kiddush, and they're debating what to order, and this traveling chassid from America sees them and tells the hotel, give them everything, the best, I'm paying for it, even wanted the kids to come back for lunch, Shabbos lunch, 1 o'clock, but they said they have to sleep, they have to go on duty again at 6. And here, this just happened this summer, a Satmar Chassid, a businessman visiting Israel with his driver, doing business, comes into this Glatt Kosher restaurant, and a whole group of soldiers had just come off patrol, and they sat down and they're debating what to order, you know, they don't want to pay too much, they don't have money, and this Satmar covered the table with food, I'm paying for it, and the cook came out to thank him. Everyone understood this is a satmar and these are kids in the Israeli army. Ashrei ayin ra'atazo. Here's the American Orthodox Jew report. Very, very interesting on the Orthodox world. And 2/3 are Haredim. It's a very important statistic that will come up in my press conference when I deal with contemporary problems. Here is anyone going into Chinuch here, Chodesh B'Chadsho, if you want things to tell the children, to give them to do, that's it. And finally, why I have a lot of Akmas Nefesh with this, they're opposing the prenuptial agreement of Morty Willick of the RCA, and they bring who's opposing it, and you'll see. And why they're opposing it is beyond me, because all I know is it's an open Gemara. Makin oto achiro omer rotsa ani. And the Rambam paskins la halakha, you can beat the heck out of a recalcitrant husband until he gives a get, as long as it's Jews beating him up. What is wrong with a prenuptial? I have my problems. My dear students, if there are no questions, until we meet again, in health and happiness, das vidanya. Where were you yesterday?
I have very, very, very close friends.
You should have brought them.
I could not. Who came from America. They're here for a bar mitzvah. And we had to, I had to invite them.
I understand that. Turn it off. It's off.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
When did Rav Moshe become the school
of Warsaw? Warsaw, 1920.
What's this book larger than?
It's the biography of the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Which one is that?
By Deutsch. It's old. It's not new. It's not new.
Was the Rav in Berlin when he was doing that already?
When doing what?
When his father was in Warsaw.
The Rav went to Berlin from Warsaw.
So then you could say that, look, wasn't Tarpat like the controversial school with the in secular education?
What I promised you.
Oh, thank you. So the Rebbe had a degree in electrical engineering?
Yeah.
But didn't he work in Brooklyn Yard?
Yeah, on the boat. He put the electrical engineering into a big boat that they built there.
Okay, we'll get there. What are you asking me?
The fact that he wanted to learn, have a secular education isn't such a big chiddush. His father was willing to be the Rosh Yeshiva in a school that was very controversial that had secular education.
He changed. That's all part of my shist change. You follow?
And then he went to YU.
And then he went to YU because he was anxious to get out. He had a big fight with Professor Balaban. Okay? Hold on to this until Friday night and I'll tell you the whole story.
Okay?
You're not familiar with Deutsch? See if you can get it. It's very, very worthwhile.
That's, they never tell that.
Too many things that I'm in the middle of reading.
It's out of print.
I think books that are out of print are more interesting to read.
But maybe it's available on Amazon.
I'm sure. Look, was it published by a Jewish?
Yeah. I think it was self-published.
And his daughter, Mrs. Schwartzman, were at our hostel. He wasn't beside a kiddushin. He didn't want to send my grandfather. We left, they were all still there. They didn't come as a Rosh Yeshiva or whatever.
Real scholar.
Came as friends. They were very close. I know
it's
all the stories.
But on a popular level.
Some of them I won't repeat.
You'll see, all his documents are there.
One of them, though.
Photographs.
When
it's very
the oldest daughter went to get married, Schneer Cutler was obviously going to be one of the next Rosh Hashivas in Lakewood. So he came to her and said, I picked up two boys.
Yeah,
I'd like you to
takes
meet them and pick
way
them. And she turned to her father.
But you're not really the honeycomb. Really? You have the same the Rav of Batayim.
No. Rosh Hashanah worked out fine.
Yeah, it's really good about Ayin.
But
no. I mean, I heard of it. I think the crew.
That's correct. He's the rabbi there, and I'm the guy who kicked him into marriage. Baruch Hashem, he never looked back. A pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
What's your name?
Moshe Herrick. Rabbi Hertz.
One second. You're a grandson of my classmate, Bob Hertz?
Yeah.
Your grandfather almost brought the yeshiva down. He lived in rebellion with the general GRS exams, whatever they call them. You don't even know. Daddy doesn't tell you.
I have to discuss with him a lot more about a lot of this.
Daddy doesn't tell you. Say that. Who else did I talk more Hertz, but are they in your family?
Probably my daddy, probably. I'm not sure. It was Ari Hertz, who was my uncle, who was taught. Howie Hertz, my father.
It's a real pleasure.
I hope I'll see you every day. I'm a Madrid and Torch. I'm also taking classes in Hebrew at the same time. So.
What are you studying in Hebrew?
Right now it's just the Mishnah until I'm hoping to study psychology.
Yeah. And you have a bachelor's degree from YU?
No, I just finished army about half a year ago.
Kalak? What did you do in the army?
I was in San Khalil.
Oh,
gotten into your room at some point.
Am I a fourth time coming in?
Probably.
What do you?
$8.90.
I think I had a grandson in 8.90. Very nice.
Nice to meet you.
I have a grandson right now. I have the fallout of the first part. I have no rakefes. I only have daughters, but I have a flock of grandsons. Samuel.
I just finished.
Yehuda Samuel. He just called us because Nebuch, one of the kids, he's in a whole group with the Benashim. And the kid lost his father, so the army gave him off 2 days to the Russian rubble. So they're down in Yerushim. He's from Yerushim, from the yeshiva. Can I? Very nice. I like the boat. And we speak the same language. I did basic training at 38. I was Kyle Stayeh.
That is New Jersey. I'm also one of the Madras family members.
No, they're people. Great.
It's like a cycle. We went to the yeshiva also. We were trying now. Now we're back in the...
It's great to be able to get back.
Great.
I don't know if my grandfather was in YU, Philip Kaplan, perhaps.
How old is your grandfather?
He's 87.
No, he's gone. It's an early generation. Very nice. So he knew Rabbi Revel, that means.
Michael Goldman.
And you're also a Madrid?
Yeah, yes.
And 1 second, and you guys have bachelors already?
I was in YU the past couple of years.
I just finished the Army also 3 weeks ago. So.
What did you do in the Army?
San Fanny as well.
Also San Fanny.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, I haven't started college yet.
Are good Jews.
Thank you.
You think when I tell them they can't live in America, you think they believe me? You think they listen? But we got to do what we're doing.
I got to show this. I downloaded all of Menashe Klein's shows on the computer.
Unbelievable. I got you involved.
Yeah.
I'm
going to try to come to share.
No, I got you involved.
Yeah.
Oh, you weren't there yesterday.
No,
we opened up with...
Yeah.
Pleasure. Now, sure. 1 second. You have to sleep slowly, and we got to give
slower.
To give you a Bronx accent.
Okay.
And remember, when we went out to the ballpark, DiMaggio was in center field, Tommy Hendrick in right field, and Charlie Keller in left field. And those were good days. You follow?
I follow.
Not like today, where within 5 years, they're all gone, because then it all becomes money.
Because I speak so fast, that's why I have a Bronx-type accent?
No, I want to give you a Bronx accent,
okay. So
I'll understand you better.
I appreciate that.
But I got to slow you down. With the Maryland accent, where in Maryland? You're in Silver
Rockville, like near Silver Spring.
Near
Silver. But I made Aliyah too soon, so I live here now. But
great. Join the crowd. You see this gentleman? He went to MTA, Harvard, finished, came to Israel, and he never looked back.
Me too. Please God.
Okay, but you gotta reach his age, and then if you can say you never look back, we're gonna be very happy.
Appreciate that. Sure. All right, take care.